irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim and Jamal Potts back on the air. And as always, thank you so much for taking your time on your Sunday afternoon or your evening, whatever it may be, to tune in to our show. We really do appreciate that. Jamal, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing all right, man. Happy Father's Day, Dad.
Yeah, I appreciate that. We want to send a shout out to all the dads out there. And hopefully they have a good day. I want to do a special shout out to my father, Charles M. Potts. Unfortunately, this week he passed away at the age of 93. This whole week has been one week where we've been reflecting on our life with Dad and Jamal, your grandfather, obviously. My father was a truck driver for over 50 years. And, we learned a lot from him. As fathers should be teaching their children. He'll be missed, as every father out there. So for those of you that also have lost parents, we want to send our special condolences out to you as well, because these are the days when we really kind of reflect on our childhood, our parents, and things of that nature. So I want to send that shout out to my dad. Hopefully he's listening in. Anything, Jamal?
Hey, I just want to, really say thank you to the legacy that he left behind in terms of, I have a successful father, you know what I mean? And I think me and my brothers are doing very well in life and, and my kids seem like they're continuing. So, the Potts family name just lives on, lives strong, based on the values that were set before us. So we're going to miss them. We love them, but we're going to carry on.
Very nice. Very nice sentiment, Jamal. Yeah, today we're going to be talking about those active shooter stats, by the way. We want to forget that. And we want to talk about the Brooks shooting as well. More so of the charges that have now been levied against the main officer in that shooting. And then we're going to have Jersey Jim on the air, who's going to call in and talk about, because remember, Jamal, last week he said that he was going to have the solution to all of this civil unrest.
Well, so, thank God.
We've been getting some feedback from our listeners that they all can't wait to hear Jim from Jersey Jim, I guess is his nickname that's cropping up now. And we'll go from there. But I also want to send out a shout on Juneteenth. All right. People I've heard on the news over the last, week or so, and there's actually a email about Juneteenth as well that we'll be talking about. So for those who celebrated it, we want to send a shout out to them as well. And hopefully everybody had a good time. I really didn't hear about anything negative going on during those celebrations. So we're glad to hear about that. Okay, let's get into these emails because we got a lot to talk about today. We want to make sure that we get to it all. So let me throw out the first email here. Jim, I'm curious as to why now there is a big deal about Juneteenth. It's an opportunistic political maneuver, and that is all. Most Americans, especially African Americans, probably never heard of it. I'm from Texas. This event involved the freeing of Texas slaves after the Civil War ended. What about the Emancipation Proclamation, which freed the slaves 2 years before? Why wouldn't that date be more appropriate? Just venting. I just hate when the politicians and others, and in parentheses, because of guilt, that now want to make it a holiday 150 years later. It's disgusting. Jared from Dallas, Texas. Well, we need to clarify some of that, Jamal, first of all, I think. The Emancipation Proclamation, because he says, why wouldn't that be the date? So just to be clear, the Emancipation Proclamation was signed on September 22nd, 1862. But it wasn't effective until January 1st of 1863. Most important about that, though, is that the Emancipation Proclamation only freed the slaves in the slave states, the southern states, the ones that were at war with the Union. It did not free the slaves, all of the slaves. So it was very limited But everybody remembers the Emancipation Proclamation. So that was not the date, in my opinion, that we should be celebrating if, in fact, it did not free all the slaves. Like I said, it only freed the slaves in the border states. The reason why Lincoln did that was because it was because of the fact that these the slaves were helping to supply the South and their efforts in fighting, meaning that they were back there doing the crops. They were doing all of these kind of things. So they were being able to keep up with the supplies because, and that freed up the men to go and fight. Whereas in the North, as an example, the farmers up there that went to fight, there was nobody to till their soil, so to speak. So it was really a strategic move by Lincoln to do that because he wanted to also disrupt the supply chain, so to speak, of the supplies that were being sent to the Southerners. And that's kind of what it was. Now, this business about Juneteenth, it's true. That did not come until after the Civil War ended. The Civil War ended April 9th, 1865, if memory serves me correct. And then it wasn't until June 19th, 1865, when the federal troops went into Galveston, Texas, and basically told the slaves, oh, by the way, you're free. Now, they didn't know that because how would they get that information? Nobody would tell them. They didn't have, you know, access to newspapers and things of that nature. So it was the Union generals, Granger was his name, as a matter of fact, when he went into Galveston to tell the slaves that they had been freed. So Juneteenth really was something that only applied to the Texas slaves because they had no idea. And of course, like I said, that was one of the states that was fighting on behalf of the South so that they would not have made that information. But I also want to point out that when Jared said that, you know, a lot of people hadn't heard of it, I just want to correct something because, you know, one of my associates went back and clarified that there were different celebrations. California has had celebrations on June 19, 2019. Florida has had celebrations. The celebrations in Georgia, Maryland, Massachusetts, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, and of course, Texas. So just to let you know, it has been celebrated. So now maybe it's what's happening, Jamal, is that the media didn't pick up on all of this until Donald Trump wanted to have his event, you follow what I'm saying, on June 19th.
Right.
So well, go ahead.
I got to say this. I really don't understand the concept of why somebody would be so irritated anyway, regardless of somebody of a group of people celebrating something that's positive to the point that irritates you. That's kind of weird to me. You know what I mean? If it's something positive, and even if we did just learn about it, so what? You know what I mean? We can't celebrate it because we just found out about it.
Well, I think that's what he's also saying, Jamal, is that they're trying to make it into a national holiday. And then why wasn't it made a national holiday before?
Well, regardless, I mean, we got to have a starting point somewhere. You know, I don't think Jesus was born on December 25th either. But guess what? We have a day that we acknowledge it. You know what I mean? So if we celebrate something at a later day, what difference is it making? It's about something positive.
You know,
We celebrate Columbus Day.
And Jamal, I was getting ready to say Columbus sailed the ocean.
America.
Jamal, I was just getting ready to say and bring up Columbus by saying, when was he here? 1492. You know, 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. I mean, I remember that from when I was little. So, so how many years later did that become a holiday? So you're right.
Right. There's a lot of things that become a holiday at a later point. You know, so
what's interesting is that people always look at Columbus that he discovered America, but the reality is he did not discover America.
He didn't
step foot. It's what he discovered supposedly was the new world. But we're actually named after Amerigo Vespucci. Okay, right. America comes from Amerigo Vespucci, which had absolutely nothing to do with Columbus, and
even celebrate. It's not even a national holiday.
Right. So he's the one that really stepped foot on the soil first.
There's a lot of more things to be irritated with than Juneteenth. You know what I mean?
Well, I think, not irritated with Juneteenth. That's true. This person appears to be irritated, but they talk about why make it a national holiday, you know, now only because of the civil unrest. But, you know, I don't have a problem with that. You know, make it a national holiday. That slavery was a big issue in our country. So if it was a big issue in our country And there's a point where the country said, okay, you know, they're all free, because at the Civil War ended, everybody, you know, all the slaves were freed. You know, that this is an important part of our American history. So right. I can see making that date, you know, as a holiday. You know, right. Why not? You know, at that point. So I don't know. We'll see what the legislators do, because a lot of times with these things, with this civil unrest, everything starts to fall to the wayside because something else jumps up, you know, and now all of a sudden we're dealing with those issues versus something like this.
I tell you another holiday I think we should have, Christmas Addicts Day.
Okay, Jamal. Christmas Addicts Day? Listen, first of all, I don't mean any offense to the listeners.
He was the first one to die in the American Revolution.
Okay, wait a minute now. Okay, first of all, Christmas Addicts, what you need to tell him that he was black. Okay, because some Absolutely. People don't even know. They're going to say Christmas who? You know, so yeah. First of all, Christmas Addicts, you know, and he was killed when the Americans were fighting the British. And I'm not sure if it was at Lexington or Concord. Okay, but it was in the 1700s, for those who may not remember the basic high school history. But Jamal, Christmas Addicts should be celebrated.
Hey, you know what? I think it's kind of symbolic. You know, honestly, all jokes aside about the contribution that our heritage has had to this country, the first bloodshed in terms of the American Revolution, he was a black man. You know what I mean? So
yeah, but I can't swear, Jamal, we're going to have to talk about that one, because I remember Christmas Addicts. I don't know that he was the first person that killed, because the first shot, they said, was the shot heard around the world. That was at Concord, okay? And I'm not sure that Christmas Addicts was at Concord or Lexington. So that's a point. I'm going to look that one up. When you say he was the first person killed, I mean, you know, history is history, so we'll have to see. I don't know that we should make it a national holiday, but hey, whatever the case may be.
I just threw it out there.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Jamal. Thank you. You know, thank you. Thank you for sharing. Okay, the next email. Okay. Jim, once again, you were right on the money. You were right on the money about the sit-in in Seattle. Now they are down from 7 blocks down to 3 blocks. Do you think that the police or government should go in and take it back? I heard they are having criminal issues as well. What are your thoughts? And that's Sarah from Portland, Oregon. Look, Sarah, here's the deal. And for those of you that don't know what she's talking about, that has to do with that sit-in. And now they call it the CHOP, you know, the CHOP Hill. It's in Seattle, where, you know, the protesters, so to speak, took over a 7-block area, including the police station that's included in that particular area. And do I think the government should go in and take it over? Look, it has been reduced down. It's down to about 3 blocks now. And I said it on the show a few shows back that, look, these sit-ins, first of all, sit-ins have been going on since the 60s. There's nothing new about sit-ins. And these sit-ins don't last forever. These are things where people get upset, they get riled, and they just sit around. They did the sit-in at Wall Street. You guys might remember that one a few years ago. And that lasted about, a week or 10 days, whatever it was. And you know, finally everybody got tired of sleeping and sitting on concrete and they all went home. I think this one's a little bit more serious than that. People are lingering. But the thing I don't like about it, Sarah, is the fact that there's businesses in that area that are being impacted. People whose livelihoods are being impacted in that area that had absolutely nothing to do with Mr. Floyd's death. And now those businesses, you know, already suffering because of COVID, and now they're not letting people, you know, into those areas, et cetera. Now, Jamal, I don't know if you heard this, but the other night on the news, I heard that there was a shooting. Somebody got killed within that tight circle, so to speak, within those three block radius. And my understanding is the police haven't been able to get in and find out what's going on because they're not going to let them into that area. So now we actually have a murder that's been committed within there. And what are we doing about that? Because they say, no police are allowed in. Now, that's a typical example of what everybody's been talking about, that how are you just going to let the fact that somebody killed somebody, so what are they going to do, get away with it? They're going to hold their own court? I don't know. You know, so Sarah, when you ask me, should the government go back in? Listen, when you start having people dying in there and people killing people, in my opinion, it's time for the government to step back in and get in there and do what they got to do. That's my feeling. I don't know, Jamal, what do you think? Should they go in?
No. Who you know, look, law still has to prevail the land. You know what I mean? So we still have to have law and order, you know? So I don't know. I don't know the whole story behind it. I don't know if these people are breaking any laws or anything like that. I'm not really sure the whole story, but I'm not sure about the murder that took place. Should something be done? I think somebody, some dialogue has to be, has to start happening. The chief of police,
which is actually a African American woman, has been on the air talking about the fact that, you know, they are trying to get a dialogue going, but Jamal's, what they're trying to do is they're trying to be as diplomatic as possible. Right. Okay. I think the mayor is on the opposite side of it. I think she's tending to lean towards the protesters, so to speak. And the chief of police is saying it's just a delicate situation. Because, you know, doggone well, if they try to push all in there, there's going to be some big issue that's going to come out. So they're trying to be very diplomatic with it. So we'll just have to wait and see. But, you know, to answer Sarah's question, yeah, I think at some point we do have to go back in, because this cannot be an example that's being set nationally where people take over a certain area in any city, okay, and try to say that, no, there's no authorities here, no police, no nothing. That's how I feel about it. So
who's doing it? What organization is doing it?
It's not an organization. It's an organization of people. But I think it's what they've done now is framed it. That's why it's called CHOP. I forget exactly what CHOP means.
Okay.
All right. But it so they formed their own little circle, so to speak. I mean, they had people with arm, you know, with rifles in there, you know, guarding and not letting people in and determining who's coming in and all those kind of things. So it's, again, to me, it's already down, like I said, from 7 blocks down to 3 blocks. You know, maybe
right.
The next time we're on the show is down to 1 block. Who knows? You know, right. At that point. So we'll just have to wait and see, you know, at okay. That point. Okay, let's get to this third email. So, Jim, I have been seeing on the news that now there are those talking about prisoners are being treated like slaves because they are forced to work for little or no pay. Don't prisoners give up their rights when they breach the law, when they break the law and are sent to prison? Where does this all end? And that's from Bertha from Columbia, South Carolina. Well, you know, Jamal, before I get into my piece of this, what's your opinion? Should prisoners, you know, receive pay for the work that they do at the prison? What do you think?
I think absolutely they should. Listen, if we're going to abolish slavery, we should abolish slavery. I get it. They're prisoners, but they're still human beings that should be treated with a level of decency. And remember, these people are eventually, a lot of them are coming home one day. You know what I mean? So what I think should happen, this is just my idea that I thought about this, is that they should have a program to, let's just say they make $10 an hour if they're working. Half of that money, maybe a little bit more, should go to some of the child support that they owe to their kids that are back at home, to their wife, kids, or, you know, people that's back at home to help subsidize some of this stuff. That way the child is not suffering anymore by not having a father at the home. So he's still contributing. He's paying his debt.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that if they're inside, they're getting money, that they can now take care of their child support from inside a prison?
If they're making money, if they're earning $10 an hour and not working for free, I'm saying this is a way to fix certain things. Because honestly, the kids at home, due to somebody's committing a crime, you know, regardless, he should still take care of his responsibilities. And that's the way to do it, to send money to that home. That's a good thing.
Okay.
And then also, I think the other portion should be set aside for when they come home from prison, that they have enough rent money to live and support themselves when they come home, to set these people up for success when they come home from prison. And so that's why I don't think they should be working for free like this.
Okay. First of all, if anybody's interested in calling in and has any comments about that, I've been holding up the telephone number on how to call in. This is a special number. It's just for this week now, because next week we'll be back live in the studio. So this is the last week we will be showing or you having to call in this way. So if anybody's interested in calling in, I've been holding it up for a few minutes. I'm getting ready to put it down now. You're welcome to call in a comment on this. Okay, Jamal, here we go. Listen, first of all, let's just be clear. Prisoners don't all work for free. Okay, so let's start with that. Okay. Now, but here's what I'm going to tell you. Some of them are being paid, Jamal, and you're not going to like this. 14 cents an hour.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Okay, so there's some that are being paid 14 cents an hour. And let's talk about prisoners' rights. First of all, as this person talked about, they give up certain rights, Jamal, because they have committed crimes. So let's start with that. Okay, absolutely. You're not a member of society at this point, and you're absolutely in the prison system at that point. But right, they do have rights. So just to give the listeners an opportunity to understand, they have a right against cruel and unusual punishment. They have a right against sexual harassment or sex crimes while they're in there. They have a right to complain about prison conditions and access to the courts. Disabled prisoners have rights as well. They're entitled to medical and mental health care. Now, these are all rights, Jamal, okay, that right, they're getting. They're entitled to First Amendment rights. They have a right against discrimination, all right? So they are, in fact, they're in there. Now, there's 2.3 million people that are incarcerated in this country, 2.3 million, all right?
Right.
Now, I want you to understand something, and I want the listeners to understand something about this. Here's the deal. The deal is that they are in there, Jamal, taking care of themselves, and they don't necessarily have to be paid to take care of themselves. So meaning they're involved in laundry. I mean, you've seen some of these things in movies, laundry, right, maintenance, you know, all these different things. They're developing. Right. Some of them are actually developing skill sets were in there. So to answer your question or your comment, to comment on your comment, that when they get out, they may have a skill set, as an example, right, because some of them are working on cars, machinery. Like I said, laundry is laundry, you know, things of that nature. So they have a wide range of daily operations, but it's necessarily to have the function of the prison go on. Because think about it, for that many people that might be incarcerated, the amount of guards, as an example, of people running it, those right, are very few in terms of the numbers that are in there. So they're put in a position where they are taking care of their own environment and taking care right, of each other from that perspective.
Right.
So, I mean, they're even cooking the food.
Right. All right.
So 14 cents an hour. Now, look, I'll tell you something else. We need to understand that they are actually manufacturing products as well.
Right.
The products that they're manufacturing goes to the government, sold to the government, and also to nonprofits as well. So it's true that the inmates don't get a whole lot of money. Now, I will tell you that there are some states, there are 8 states, Jamal, that don't pay the prisoners anything. All the other states pay them something as low as 14 cents an hour. Now, when they also help out with fires and things of that nature, so you hear about these fires, they get paid more. They get like a dollar an hour or whatever the case may be. Now, again, that's not a lot of money, but again,
right,
look, these are prisoners. But I will tell you, Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, Oklahoma, and South Carolina and Texas, they don't pay their people anything. They're not paid for their labor, all right?
Right.
These are government-run facilities, so they're not going to be paid. But work opportunities theoretically benefit inmates by enabling them to spend time out of their cells as well. Okay, so think about that. Rather than just being in a cell all day, they're now outside of the cell working on some of these different things that we just talked about. What's right, wrong with that? Nothing.
Well, let me ask, what is your thoughts on what I just said in terms of the proposal, if they're getting paid $10 an hour and half of that money goes back to pay, you know, for their kids that are back at home, their rent and their living conditions, because otherwise you got a continuous cycle. Okay. You have a continuous cycle. When they get out, they have no money to take care of themselves. And therefore, if they're not able to take care of themselves as soon as they get out, then guess what? They're going to be likely to go right back to crime. You know what I mean? So I'm saying set up a winning program, a higher successful program to where they can be rehabilitated. They paid their debt. So find a way to integrate them back into society with a chance.
Okay. First of all, $10 an hour. I just got through telling you there's 2.3 million people incarcerated. They ain't going to give them $10 an hour. I mean, you're talking, that's more money than some people on the outside might be making in certain industries. Not that that's the right thing.
I just threw a number out there.
Okay, well, that's fine. But you mentioned $10. You asked me to comment. That's what I'm doing.
Right.
Okay. Now, Jamal, I have a better idea for you. You're talking about, why don't they send the money home to help support their families? Well, first of all, they gave up certain things, Jamal, and they should have thought about that before they got incarcerated. That's the first thing. But the second thing is, if they're making money, I got a better idea. Why don't they send that money that you're talking about? Why don't they send that to the victims who either they robbed or killed, or whose home they burglarized?
You talking about restitution? It's, I mean, they do have to pay restitution. But see, this is what I'm saying, though. I get what you're saying, the burglarizing and you know, the murders and stuff like that. But at the same time, look, I've been through the child support system. And you know who they say they care about first? The kid, no matter what. So therefore, you know, let them send this money to take care of the responsibilities and send it home to take care of the kids, because otherwise the kid is suffering. The kid don't have a father. Don't have a father in the home. Yes, it's maybe the father's fault for whatever reason he got locked up. And then you got a single mom at home struggling. So this would help out.
I understand that, Jamal, but 14 cents an hour is not going to help him out that much, first of all.
That's why I said move him up to $10 an hour and slave wages.
Yeah,
slave wages.
Just to be clear, slaves didn't make any money, Jamal. So when you say that, okay, we got a caller. I'm trying to figure out how to do this. So if the caller can hear me, you get cut off, you know, trying to call back in. I'm going to click.
I can hear you, Jim.
Oh, you're on. Okay, very good. Okay, very
good. Yeah, I'm on. Yeah. Okay. Jim.
Jersey? Oh, Jersey Jim is on already. Okay,
Jersey Jim.
Yep.
Well, everybody. Since you're here, I'm assuming you've listened to us with these prisoners and the prisoners getting.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you're going to use them for labor, I mean, that's not part of their sentence. When they're sentenced to jail for X amount of years, you know, that I'm sure it doesn't include. Well, yeah, it also includes if the prison wants to use you for building roads too. So I think if they want to use prisoners for labor outside the prison, absolutely they should be paid something. This way they have, you know, money when they get out. Whatever.
Yeah, but I just mentioned the fact that they get when they go outside of the prison to fight the fire. Now there's two separate things here: in prison versus out of prison. When they're outside of the prison, as I stated, my research that like to help fight these fires, they're getting $1 an hour. So they are being paid outside of the prison from that situation. Now, remember something. When these guys do get some money, they're able to buy things for themselves also. You know, it's funny. But
that's true.
You know, and remember something else. These people actually have – some of them have websites. These guys have their own computers now. I mean, this is not just they're in there and it's all four gray walls and everything. These guys have a lot of rights in there now. They have access to law libraries. They have a lot of different things.
I'm sorry, excuse me. You keep saying $1 an hour, what does $1 an hour take care of? I mean, we outsource jobs in other countries.
Jamal, it's a dollar an hour. Jamal, it's $1 an hour. Remember something. Their room and board, okay? Their room and board is covered. They're not paying rent. They're not paying food. Their clothes are being washed. All right. So there's a lot of they are getting some benefit. Look at it that way. It's just not that simple. And again, look, my feeling about it is that when they're incarcerated, they gave up certain rights. It's not supposed to be that here we're gonna give you all of these things after you've killed somebody, after you've turned around and burglarized somebody's home, and after you robbed somebody.
But that's why they're incarcerated. They're doing their time. They're being taken out of society, taken away from their homes. They can't go to a movie theater. They can't go to the mall. They can't do any of that stuff. I get that, but they're still human beings that are eventually going to get released to society.
And that's fine.
Do you want them to come home worse than what they went in?
Wait a minute. The money has nothing. That has nothing to do with anything.
It does. And when I say it does, is because if they come home set up for success, they might have enough money just to pay their rent. Let's just say for 6 months to a year that they've saved up.
Who's going to pay them, Jamal? Who's going to pay them this money? Where's this money going to come from? Who's going to pay them? You know what's going to pay them? It's the taxpayers. Where do you think the money's coming from?
Well, some of these privatized prisons was making money too. And there's companies being, and the things that's being made by these prisoners too.
Wait a second. I agree that there are things that they make. They make barbecue smokers.
Right.
They make license plates. And they also make Braille textbooks as well. Okay. So, but again, you're talking about private prisons now. So now here we go down another slippery slope, private prisons versus government-run prisons. All right. Are we separating out the two? Which does it need to be? And look, like I said, the taxpayers, Jamal, on the government, that means the taxpayers are going to be paying these people. These guys were a menace to society. That's why they're being incarcerated. Why do I want to pay my tax dollars to give them money, okay, to help them sustain their own existence while they're in prison?
Because, like I keep saying, if we don't take care of them, when they come home, they're going to be a problem. They might even be even more of a problem. You know, you got to still treat people with humanity. You know, our country gets mad at other people for treating people like some of the way these prisoners are getting treated. And we point the finger at them and, hey, you shouldn't be treating people like this.
No, because in those prisons, it's a hell of a lot different than the conditions that these guys in our prisons here, Jamal. Look, some of these prisons that are outside of this country, the conditions are horrible. Our conditions in prison are not horrible. Okay, and once again, I don't think that the taxpayers, we're already paying for their housing, Jamal. We're already paying for that food that they're eating, Jamal. Taxpayers are already paying money out. Why do I want to pay somebody to be in prison? Why do I want to pay somebody to be there?
But we're paying them now. Like, and all I'm saying is set them up for success so people don't have to keep going. That's all I'm saying.
Setting them up for success is an issue that starts with the rehabilitation process. And it's really, they're already in place rehabilitation. Jersey Jim, what do you think?
Well, it's probably a complicated issue.
It is a complicated issue.
I don't know.
That's why we're talking about it. It is a complicated, issue. But, you know, it's not going to change from any of that.
No, I'm just thinking about what I'm going to say about what I promised last week.
hey, Jersey Jim, I got to tell you, man, there's a lot of pressure on you, Jersey Jim, because I got a lot of text messages and phone calls saying they want to hear how your plan to get rid of racism or to end racism. So, there's a lot of pressure on you.
We're not going to end racism.
Go ahead. We're going to let Jersey Jim go ahead and speak because everybody's been waiting. So give it to us.
You're never going to end racism completely because you're never going to change the minds of people in the KKK, the neo-Nazis, or any white supremacist group. But in the general public, you know, people are comparing this year, 2020, to 1968. Now, Jamal, you weren't born yet, obviously, but Jim, you and I remember 68. And there are similarities. You're a little older than that, Jim. Come on. You're my age. We were teenagers and we remember well what 68 was. There were race riots, there were protests, we were in the middle of a presidential election, and it was a terrible year. We had two major assassinations, which thankfully we haven't had yet. But one of them was Martin Luther King. And Martin Luther King, I remember he had, everybody knows about I Have a Dream speech, which was 5 years earlier. And I'm looking at it right now. And one paragraph in that, he says, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will be judged by the color of their skin, not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." Now, if you can get people to get that mindset, to think that way, that you don't judge somebody by the color of their skin, you judge them by the content of their character. If that would cut down on the racism, if people would think that way.
But Jim, I need to correct you on something. When I say correct you on something, you mentioned about white supremacists, et cetera, and then you brought up 1968. In 1970, I was at Howard University in Washington, D.C. For those of you who do not know Howard, it was a university that was primarily African-American students. I was there in 1970. What we had also around were the Black Panthers. And the Black Panthers, okay, they were radical, okay? And they were not kind, okay? And they hated white people. So when you said white supremacists, let's understand that when we start talking about bigotry and racism, it's not just white supremacists. You have also, okay, organizations out there that are made up primarily, okay, of African Americans. As an example, like the Black Panthers, who, by the way, are on the comeback road. They're the opposite. So they're racist. So you can't just say racism to me is racism.
What,
Well, right. So the reverse is true, too. The reverse is true, too.
I'm sorry, Jim. Go ahead.
The reverse is true, too. I mean, the Black Panther, you can't judge somebody because they're white. If they're all whites are bad. If somebody's a bad person because of the content of their character, not because of the color of their skin.
But I don't disagree with you. That's why I'm bringing that up. I think the word racism, okay, needs to be handled from all different directions. And I don't disagree with that. And I think people should be judged based upon their character versus upon the color of their skin. No, you know, we went to all white, you know, private schools when we were coming along. And man, we caught hell from those other students. I mean, every kid wasn't that way. Okay. We had, you know, students that liked us that we got along very well with. And then you had that contingency, so to speak, that because of the color of our skin, they weren't worrying about our character. The only thing they were focused on was the color of our skin. So I do believe that. Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you. It works both ways. Jamal, what were you going to say?
Let me jump in here. The Black Panthers was not a racist organization.
What?
Let me explain something, because I've studied this. But the Black Panthers...
I lived it, but go ahead.
Okay. They created food programs for schools in the community. They was actually about uplifting the community. And hold up. The Black Panthers are a product of the time that they were living in. The police brutality was worse then than it is now. And they was defending themselves. That don't make them racist. Defending yourself doesn't make you racist in those times that they were living in. Those times was like really brutal, and that's why they had so many riots. So the Black Panthers was a product of what was going on in society. So therefore, you have a right to defend yourself. You can't keep getting beat, lynched, and hung. And then say you racist for defending yourself?
Well,
and then building their community up?
They have
a lot of community programs.
Okay, first of all, Jamal, you're talking about things you've read. I've lived it, okay? And I know, and I've talked to some of these people. And there were people out there like Bobby Seale, Stokely Carmichael. These people out there killing cops, Jamal, okay? And I get it, okay? But they were not practicing, you know, necessarily, you know, race relations. Okay, it wasn't going down like that. I'm just telling you. I understand that you read things in books, but like Jim said, you know, we lived it. And Jim, you're on the line. You tell me back in that day. You tell me about the Black Panthers. Were they just people that were doing you know community donations of food? You tell me. What's your opinion?
They were basically the black equivalent of white supremacists. They were the black equivalent.
That's totally false. Look, Jim, let me ask you, what is a group of people supposed to do? And we know the cop brutality, and they were murdering people and getting away with it very easy. They weren't even being
prosecuted. Nobody is debating the fact that people had to fight back. That's what the civil unrest was about. You know, nobody is saying that. Nobody's saying that all policemen, first of all, let's just back up. All policemen were not bad, and they're still not all bad, okay? Nobody is saying that there aren't policemen, okay, that back in the day that, you know, blacks were being mistreated. It's the same issue, Jamal. You're talking about 1968, and this is 2020,
right?
Okay? So nobody is disputing the fact that there weren't issues, okay? That's what the 60s was all about with all of the rioting and that everything, because people were fighting back, okay? So I'm not disputing any of that. The only thing that I said was that when Jim mentioned about white supremacists, I just wanted to mention that there's also on the other side of the coin, Jamal, there's also black supremacists. And I'm not talking about just, you know, take the Black Panthers away for a second. There are black supremacist groups out there, Jamal, that are out there, you know, that believe the same way as the white supremacists do, and no mixing of the races. Hell, you could go back further than that to Marcus Garvey in the early 1900s. He believed in the solidarity of the races, and that the races, you know, should not mingle in the rest of that. This isn't new.
Then let me ask you this: since the Black Panthers being equated to the KKK,
I did not equate them to the KKK. You did not hear that. I didn't say that out of my mouth.
Jim from Jersey just said that. So what I was going to say, and you compared it to, you said on the flip side, the KKK, it was white. It was the other black supremacist group as the Black Panthers.
You say, you know, I said that.
Well, you said that part in terms of, like you said, on the flip side of the KKK and white supremacy.
No, I didn't. I never mentioned the KKK.
Oh, you
never mentioned the KKK. I said white supremacists.
White supremacists.
That's right.
Okay, on the flip side, how many people did the Black Panthers ever lynch?
Well, I didn't say they were the equivalent of the KKK. I said they were equivalent of white supremacists. There's a difference. Okay, KKK is white supremacists, but they're at the extreme. You have white supremacists that are not that. They're not going to lynch anybody, but they push the their racism. I mean, they wear the racism on their sleeve, that type of thing.
What about the Nation of Islam? With Farrakhan, Jamal,
man, don't
Elijah me Muhammad, that preached the separation of the races and things of that nature. That was a radical group here in this country.
You said it was a radical group?
They are a radical group.
Okay, once again, you know what's funny? The Nation of Islam don't even believe in carrying guns.
So
you know what I mean?
It's the ideology that we're talking about, Jamal. The ideology
of the Nation of Islam, because I've studied them too. The ideology is to take care of your family. Don't rely on the government. Work, get a job, create your own jobs. These are all the matter of fact, they believe in clean shave, wear suits. Matter of fact, all their women, they're not strippers. They're not doing any of that. They live a very good life. They are
Jamal, I'm not saying that. What I'm talking about is the fact that they do espouse the fact that the separation of the races. And you're not going to have, you know, a society where you have people that continue on a day-by-day basis with this business about the separation of the races. But look. I think we could debate this issue all day long. One of the things that Jim was talking about here was a solution. So, Jim, is what I did, okay, was some research on my own because I was curious what you were going to come up with. And I agree with you about Martin Luther King. And by the way, Martin Luther King was a Republican. A lot of people think he was a Democrat because he was African-American. He was not a Democrat. He was actually a Republican. So a lot about what he said. So for my opinion, he was more of a bipartisan type of person, although he was in fact a Republican. But I came up with my own things after doing some research about what I think the solution might be. Okay. And I kept it very simple to six different things. The first one is that we need people that can intervene. And when I say intervene, I'm talking about people with experience in volatile community conflict and conflict resolution. Think about that. We need people that can go in that are experienced people that have intervened in community conflicts. Okay, they can meet with, let's just take these guys in Seattle as an example, all right? Within this 3-block radius, we need the interventionists that can come in and say, okay, what is it that you want? Then you need to be able to go to the chief of police there as an example, what do you want? It's almost like mediators. You know, I'm a mediator also, all right? So to me, that's what a community needs. That's the first thing. You need that. You need a third party that can help resolve the issues between the community and let's just say law enforcement as an example. And I'm not saying some of that might not be out there somewhere because a lot of the departments, they do have these community liaisons and things of that nature. Number two was that we got to identify the stakeholders who can be a resource to help develop and implement a durable solution. So stakeholders, who are the stakeholders in these communities when you really think about it? The business owners as an example, that these people can come together. They're a stakeholder. The local politicians should be a stakeholder, but I think they end up being partisan more than bipartisan as an example. Your pastors, your priests, things of that nature, stakeholders, okay, should help try to resolve some of these issues because they already have the ear, okay, of their, you know, congregations as an example. Or their constituents, the ones that are voting for them. So we need stakeholders involved, not people coming from the outside that aren't stakeholders because they can't, in my opinion, they can't relate to the issues a community might be having. That's number two. Number three, you gotta establish the trust of the residents. And that's problematic because right now, the residents, all of the residents do not trust like law enforcement as an example. But there are residents who do trust law enforcement. Who believe in what law enforcement has to offer, et cetera. But you've got to instill the trust. And that's the difficult part where law enforcement, because of the acts of a few, have now impacted the trust that a community may have. Now, Take some place like Beverly Hills as an example. You don't think that the Beverly Hills, I'm just using this as an example. So if anybody's living in Beverly Hills, don't be writing to me or anything. You know, as an example, you think they trust local law enforcement? Of course they do. Why? It's a whole different ballgame than another community. And I don't want to name any particular community, but let's just say it's a large African-American community where it could be the opposite. So why is it in one respect? It's because of the trust factor. Why? Because in Beverly Hills, there's going to be less issues of interaction between the citizens and the police department versus another place. So that trust, we've got to figure out how to get the trust from the residents, okay, with local law enforcement and their politicians. Number four, we got to establish protocols between local officials and law enforcement. Protocols between those two organizations. Look at the politicians right now. Look at law enforcement right now. You got one side saying, hey, don't trust the police and let's go ahead and defund them. You got another side saying, let's not defund them, but let's give them more money so we can educate them as an example. So there we go. We can now have that disconnect once again because of who? The politicians. You got to get the politicians on the same page. If we can get the politicians on the same page, that's a giant step, in my opinion, in heading in the right direction. But unfortunately, we can't get those guys out there to agree on anything, you know, for all practical purposes. Number five, communication strategies with the media. The media, to me, is a big problem. The media has a tendency to always want to blow these issues up. Okay, and they don't necessarily help with the solutions. If it's on fire, they want to be able to show the fire. It's like an earthquake. We have a little tremble out here, okay, and one little building gets damaged. What does the media do? Oh my God, there was an earthquake in California. Look at the damage out there. So we get calls from relatives. Jamal, you know, we get calls from relatives. My God, are you guys okay? So we've got to do a communication strategy with the media to work with the media to understand. Okay, there's some of this, what they're doing and the way that they're communicating it, but they always want to fall back and say what? First Amendment protection. The last one, identify the factors that created the conflict, okay, and look at the framework of the issues, meaning that, okay, with the situation with Mr. Floyd as an example, what created that conflict? A police officer putting his knee on the neck of Mr. Floyd. If he hadn't have done that, all right, if he hadn't have done that and Mr. Floyd had not died, we wouldn't have known anything other than if Mr. Floyd was probably arrested or whatever the case may be. But he died, unfortunately. So you get these issues and you look at these issues and try to resolve the issue on how it happened, why it shouldn't have happened. That one is the one that's at the tip of everybody's tongue right now. I'm sorry, you guys. Those were the six. What do you guys think? Jim, what do you think?
That's pretty good. It's pretty comprehensive. You know, the simple point that I was making was that the root of racism is the fact that people judge other people by the color of their skin. It sounds simple, but it's not just the color of the skin.
This country, Jim, let's just go back in time, has a tendency to do it by anybody that's different. They do it toward the LGBTQ community, and their skin color is all different colors. They did it with the Chinese when they came over here. They did it with now the Latinos. They've done it with the Irish over the Irish potato famine when they came over here. This country has a tendency to do it. And racism is not just color based. I'm sorry, Jamal, a comment from you real quick before.
I think you made a lot of good points. I like a lot of those that you suggested. You know, you talked about the media earlier. You know, the media can only show what's going on. If certain things is not going on, then they can't show it. I understand in some sense they fan the flames, but just like they show negative images of the police constantly and their brutality, I think the like shows like Cops in the First 48 shows 90% of minorities committing crimes when that's not necessarily the case.
But you say the media, I understand your point.
The media fan the flames on both sides.
They fan the flames on both sides, but let's just make something else clear. The media makes stuff up also sometimes, Jamal. The reason why I say that is how many times have you heard where one of those agencies had to walk back, okay, or take back something that they said, okay, that wasn't true. That happens also. Whatever the small percentage is, it does happen, okay, right, as well. So the media, to me, needs to be more neutral in their thinking, and they need to be able to understand, okay, when they fan the flames, but they don't care. They want to see the violence. They want to see these different things. You know, and that's the sad truth of the matter. Okay, guys, listen, Jersey Jim, we do appreciate you calling in with your opinions. Right now, it's time to say goodbye to our audience. You know, et cetera. You've been listening to Jim Potts, Jamal Potts, and Jersey Jim, by the way, on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Be sure to join us next week. Hey, do us a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word. Until then, be safe, and we'll see you next week.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. Happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day, Jim and Jamal.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.